Hey there, well-being. It's December. I almost always start my newsletters with being shocked by the passage of time. But time really has flown, especially the last quarter of this year. I'm trying something new with this newsletter, so I'm sharing an audio version embedded into the edition. So hey, if you're listening to this right now, and this is an option or alternative for those of you who may prefer or find it easier to listen to the newsletter. I'd love to hear your feedback on whether you'd want me to keep this format for future editions. Feel free to hit reply on the newsletter email and let me know your thoughts on the newsletter in general, but also on the format. So please don't be shy and hit respond. Also, a little request from me is if you'd like to share snippets of this newsletter on your social media platforms, my only request is that you tag me so I can be able to see what you say and also repost it onto my own platforms. So let's get right into it. The first thing we're talking about is the theme of decolonizing wellness. So in my last newsletter in the month of October, I talked about nervous system regulation, a term that I used for what I've been doing, where I intentionally slow down, focus on one task at a time, manage my consumption, seek clarity, and allow myself to process big emotions. I had interacted with social media content that used similar language and felt like it resonated with this practice. I have since seen multiple posts on social media where creators explain why regulating our nervous system is a myth. I've shared links to two particular ones that stood out for me, so you can check the links in the newsletter. An excerpt from the former one says that Western wellness wants our bodies to behave and succumb to our will. It wants them to be calm, neutral, non-dual, efficient, and predictable at a moment in time that invites us to collaborate and mass mobilize. The author goes ahead to explain that the pattern of Western wellness continues and is a depoliticized spirituality, urging stillness, when what's needed is reconditioning, decolonization, connection, and courage. That the definition of regulation was never built by or for bodies shaped by complexity, migration, disability, survival, or resistance. Both posts allude to a regulated nervous system being rooted in not understanding how nervous systems work. To paraphrase and to summarize, our nervous systems are meant to be dynamic and respond to different contexts and environments. That is, we weren't designed to be either in fight or flight, that is in survival mode, or rest and digest, that is calm, all the time. I agree with what they are saying about our nervous systems being programmed to move from one state to another. Moving into survival mode is usually in response to real or perceived threats. They rightly highlight that people who have lived through social injustice, displacement, war, marginalization, or chronic uncertainty, including developmental trauma, can have a more activated baseline. This activation is not pathology, it's wisdom. One author states that the dominant wellness narratives treat our nervous system like a machine to be optimized. This is an extension of capitalist ideology that views the human body as a resource. I think here is where I feel like this is a yes and subject and not an either or. I can see how telling people to calm down could make them more docile and palatable workers for an oppressive system. However, I've previously spoken about Dr. Tricia Hersey's work on how rest is an act of resistance. I believe that the pursuit of said rest includes learning ways to, in quotes, calm down in order to have the capacity to push back against the oppressive system. I cannot think clearly, participate in the revolution, and imagine a better future when I am constantly on edge. Beyond that, I cannot even appreciate the beauty of everyday life when my body is on high alert and distracted. I struggle to show up for myself or others when I'm in what feels like a panic. When I'm in survival mode, I'm more likely to self-soothe by doom-scrolling, over or under-eating, and overspending. I'm then less likely to reach out for help because of the guilt and shame tied to these actions. Since I started, in quotes, regulating my nervous system, I am more aware of when I'm self-soothing. This has been a great opportunity for me to pause, witness that without shame or guilt, and develop alternative coping strategies. Currently, the two main ones are sitting in the discomfort of identifying the most immediate source or sources of my anxiety, and talking or working through this with a loved one or a professional. They often go hand in hand. So while I may do away with the terminology of nervous system regulation, I believe that wanting to be calmer, which is a gross oversimplification of the above, is a revolutionary act within the capitalist structure, that we can acknowledge how easy it is for this to become another item on the productivity checklist and can easily be misused. For example, saying, I want to be calm so that I can get more done under capitalism. That is not my objective. I want to be calm enough to look up and smell the roses, do less but deeper and more meaningful work, to have the capacity to be a present individual in all my relationships, including the one with myself, and to have the bandwidth to be a part of imagining and creating a better sociopolitical future than the one we have today. The next theme of this newsletter edition is on anger. What I've mentioned above is a nice segue into this topic. I have noticed that I have been more readily emotive since I started, in quotes, calming down. What's been most interesting is that I have been quicker to anger, which is a feeling I have historically not experienced or expressed as much. This is actually very exciting for me because it reflects internal growth when it comes to allowing myself to embody a fuller spectrum of emotions, including uncomfortable ones. And I've always found anger particularly challenging. Most of my newfound anger is transient, which lets me release that discomfort from my mind and body and move on quicker. It feels different because since I've allowed myself to be angry, it dissipates very quickly and doesn't sit somewhere in my body for longer periods of time. Many people have talked about why women struggle with anger. I reference an article that says there is still a well-established double standard when it comes to anger, and it splits directly along traditional gender lines. Men get more leeway when it comes to anger, perhaps because they have traditionally been viewed as world protectors, controllers, and enforcers. There's also the biological theory around testosterone and anger that's mentioned in this article. It states, biologically, the male hormone testosterone has been associated with aggression and irritability at both low and high levels. However, it isn't clear which comes first. Do people who are prone to anger generate more testosterone, or does poor regulation of testosterone then trigger their anger? Some experts believe that suppressing emotions, particularly anger, has been linked to increased stress, dysregulated immune function, and chronic inflammation, which may contribute to the development or worsening of autoimmune diseases. This article that I reference mentions a number of recent studies that have proved this. I quote, in 2022, researchers from the University of Pittsburgh found that women of color who frequently suppress their anger were 70% more likely to experience carotid atherosclerosis, a cardiovascular condition that increases the risk of stroke. There are also other studies that link self-silencing with irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome, and cancer among women. A recent Stanford-led study has even pointed towards a connection between suppressed anger and the rise of autoimmune disorders in women of color. I've honestly not had the time to read the studies prior to sending this newsletter, so I'm just assuming that they are credible. I plan to return to them with a more critical lens when I have the time and the bandwidth. Even if they're mostly anecdotal, I still think it's an interesting hypothesis. I say all this to conclude that I believe that anger is healthy and is anecdotally doing wonders for my well-being. I am angry when I witness or experience someone's rudeness and lack of consideration. I am angry at the state of the world. I am angry when and that people die. And that's okay. I feel the rage and release it. Sometimes the anger stays with me, and rightly so. Since making space for rage, I am calling out unkindness and injustice in different contexts with more ease. I am honoring anger as a part of my grief, and I'm feeling lighter. The next theme of this newsletter is titled The Onlineness of It All. I won't get into the specifics of it, but I'll provide some context for the sake of what I'm going to share. In November, some Kenyan content creators went on a funded trip to Israel, and there have been mixed reactions from Kenyans online in response to this. This has also been followed up by other creators calling them out on their decision to go on this trip, given that Israel has been and continues to ethnically cleanse Palestine. On a personal note, I feel that it's my own responsibility, with the support of a loving community, to do the work of learning about history and current affairs. And this is something I'm working on slowly and surely, day by day. And my focus on my online platforms will always be to lead with curiosity and share whatever I'm learning as I go, and engage meaningfully and respectfully with others, even if we have differing opinions. Honestly, I'm trying very hard to spend as little time as possible on social media, so I might miss whatever's trending and have no context on what's being discussed. I'm not a journalist. I'm not here to provide breaking news and my subsequent take on said breaking news. It's easy to get caught up in trying to address every single issue or take sides and make public statements on what's happening on social media in the heat of the moment. I feel like that can and has been a distraction, for me at least, from actually doing the work of becoming more educated on these subjects offline. I say all this to say, don't expect me to speak up online on every single issue happening in Kenya or anywhere in the world for that matter. I'm very far from having all the answers and knowledge, and it matters more to me to spend my time learning than on coming online to share my takes on what other people are or aren't doing with their lives or platforms. Also, formulating and providing opinions on how other people live their lives and use their platforms is not a priority of mine on or offline. I can only focus on and speak for myself. I amplify what I can, and I aim to do so when I've done some of the offline work of learning and reflecting prior to this. Like every other human being, I am not infallible and can change my mind and opinions when presented with new information and experiences. Unfortunately, since the internet is forever, every statement made on social media feels like it's written in indelible ink. As a creator, I'm hyper aware of this perceived permanence of our opinions, thoughts, feelings, and actions, and how quickly you can be written off in the court of public opinion with no leeway for evolution or recalibration. I think that this mirrors people's already existing resistance to change as a whole, which is a constant and inevitable part of life. I'm also reminded that there are people who are making an impact, and they aren't on social media. Online activism, which is often primarily through amplification, which does matter, don't get me wrong, is just one way to participate. I don't have to be on social media to find avenues to donate, volunteer, educate, apply pressure to local authorities or politicians, sign relevant petitions, vote, protest, boycott, and divest. Artists also use their art as tools to fight oppression through multiple forms of media, including publications and print, literature, music, paintings, poetry, film, etc. These are mediums which can be both created and consumed offline to a large extent. Of course, we are in the digital age, so how offline you can be, you know, it varies. Social media presence can very quickly become a performance of professing stances that are not your own due to pressure from others, hot takes and blame and shame games, and subsequent cancel culture, all of which may not be grounded in enough independent education and reflection on the subjects being discussed, and how all of this fits into the sociopolitical, religious, and cultural context that I exist in as an individual. There's so much room for me to be more involved in these offline ways, so I want my efforts to be channeled there more than on the onlineness of it all. Now, I want to talk about the gems from this month. So these are the things I've really enjoyed listening to, consuming, just any and everything that I've liked from the month. The first one is an episode called The Regime of Convenience by Binchtopia. This episode and podcast was recommended to me by a friend. I will use the description of the episode. they discuss the strange and somewhat evil journey of content streaming. They track the rise from radio to Napster to Netflix, expose how labels teamed up with platforms to rob artists blind, and unpack how mood playlists and background noise culture encourage you to passively consume your music, not listen to it. They also hear from binges, which is what I believe they call their audience, who have done away with streaming entirely, and talk about hopeful alternatives for finding and interacting with art you love. Digressions in the episode include Matt Rife's new haunting business venture, Katy Perry's stay at the Kia Asylum, and unfortunately hitting the Sydney Sweeney button. So these digressions happen in the first, I want to say, 20 minutes of the episode, and then the rest of the episode is what I'm addressing in my newsletter. So I've been thinking a lot about the best ways to support artists and ensure that money is going directly into their pockets. I learned about Spotify's unethical business practices from this YouTube video of a musician called Alicia Renice, who I follow. And that video made me want to boycott Spotify as a whole and find better alternatives. I gathered that other streaming platforms pay artists better, and that includes Tidal and Apple Music. So I made the switch to Apple Music recently. I then came across a post that I've linked in the newsletter that provided even better alternatives. I just switched to Qobuz. I don't know how you actually say it out loud. This is my first time saying it. Qobuz or Qobuz, which I plan to use from this month onwards. I used an app called Soundiz, which I've linked in the newsletter, that provides a seamless way to transfer all your playlists from whatever platform you're using now onto another one. It transferred all my playlists to Qobuz in around 15 minutes. I was super impressed. The second gem of the month is Women and Fitness by Legally Clueless. So this is a podcast that is hosted by Adele Onyango. Adele Onyango started a series called Mannerless Women, where she interviews women from different backgrounds and they share both their expertise and personal experience on going against the status quo to some capacity. In this episode, she interviews fitness coach Stephanie Moura. What I loved about this episode is how Stephanie honors the multiple factors that contribute to women's health and fitness: hormones, personal and work stressors, motherhood, etc. She incorporated all of these factors into her practice and comes across as a very holistic and empathetic coach. She also talks about how she often refers her clients on to therapists because mental health struggles and trauma also inform her clients' capacity or lack thereof to engage with her training programs. Lastly, she's the one who pointed out the study on unresolved anger and its effects on women, which inspired me to read further on the subject and talk about it above. The third and last gem of the month is a YouTube video titled How the Natural Hair Movement Died by Afope Atoyebi. Afope is a trichologist, health and beauty scientist, and wellness advocate. Her hair content is insightful, well-researched, and thorough. In this video, she perfectly encapsulates the journey of the natural hair movement. I really like how she challenges and addresses the hot take that the movement has died. I'm reminded that while natural hair was a trend for some, wearing our natural hair as it is, has been, and will continue to be a thing for centuries. I'm grateful to the movement because it definitely inspired me to go natural, but my decision to stay natural goes beyond that. What are your gems from November? So that's basically it for this edition of the newsletter. I'd really love to hear your thoughts on anything that came up while you were listening to this. Feel free to hit reply and email me back. I hope that as we go into the holiday season, the end of the year, that joy, rest, laughter, and love find you with ease. Thank you so much for being here. Wishing you a blessed month ahead. And I will probably or hopefully speak to you again before the new year. Always remember that your hair is your crown and your body is a temple. Embrace it, love it, and take care of it.